I call the House Education Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Good afternoon, everyone. Today we have a very packed agenda. We will start by approving minutes before we recall a bill from Rep. Censor Murr that we laid over last week. Following that, we will hear a presentation from the Sandy Hook Promise on the current state of gun violence in schools, which will provide context for the bills we will be considering today. Rep. Hill, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes, and if so, would you move to approve them? Rep. Hill moves to approve the minutes from Tuesday, February 24th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The minutes are approved. We will now move to bill hearings. Welcome, Representative Censor Murra. It looks like you are all set. I will move House File 3409 before the committee, and I will also take this time to remind members that the bill before us has had the A1 amendment adopted already, so it is the House File 3409 as amended. We're not taking testimony today, as we heard extensive testimony last week. But I do understand there is a DE amendment that we have not had a chance to get to. So, Chair Bennett, if you would like to move your amendment and explain it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I move the DE1 amendment.
In discussion to the amendment.
I guess I'd like to describe this if I could. The amendment would put into state law the expectation that our public schools should comply with federal law. That's what they should be doing, including case law, which was established by the United States Supreme Court. And I'll give an example. Schools are expected to abide by the anti-segregation requirements of the landmark case Brown versus Board of Education. And specific to our discussion today, the 1982 decision in Plyer versus Doe. So the amendment is simple, comply with federal law. And I expect schools will have no problem with implementing these expectations, since I have no reason to believe that our public schools are engaged in actions of denying equal access of education based on race or immigration status. So the underlying bill assumes that schools are actively denying equal access to education based on the immigration status, and we have no reason to believe that that's true. As a matter of fact, I want to say our schools are complying with that law, and we have no evidence that they are not. The bill seems to assume that schools are complicit with the immigration enforcement activities that are not required by law, and I have no reason to believe that this is true. So I believe even this amendment itself is unnecessary because we have no reason to believe that our public schools are actively denying equal access based on race or immigration status. Our schools, unfortunately, are caught in the middle right now of a political dispute, and expecting our schools to solve this problem through more mandates or micromanagement, I don't believe is the solution. Since we don't need a law to tell our schools to obey the law, the bill and the amendment are unnecessary. So I'm actually going to withdraw this amendment, and I urge members to vote no on the bill, and I'm willing to continue dialogue towards a reasonable solution, but I just don't see that we need a law telling schools to obey current law.
The DE1 amendment has been withdrawn. Discussion to the bill as amended. Representative Godfrey.
Yeah, so I'm actually a little disappointed to hear that there's a no vote recommended for this because, you know, coming into this, this wasn't about duplicating laws or anything like that. It was about establishing our values as a state and as an education policy committee body. And I had really thought it was going to be a great opportunity to really come together and codify within statute that every child has a right to a world-class education, every child, regardless of immigration status or any other identifiers that they have. And I had really hoped that in a time of really deep division and high tensions that we would be able to come together to reject, you know, this really growing and dangerous sentiment that we are saying within our politics that there are rights for me or rights for us, but not for them. And you'll sense a little bit of anger in my tone because I had actually written some comments under the assumption that we would be passing this bill along. And I think that's, unfortunately, everything that I wrote is now moot. It's not null and void. And I really wish that we had been able to come together to really combat this dangerous and growing sentiment that some of us have rights and some of us don't, and really codify again into state law that we believe every single child has an affirmative right to a world-class education. I think the sentiment that some of us have rights and others don't has been a sentiment that has been used to justify some really horrendous actions throughout our history. So I'll be frank. I'm upset right now, and I would encourage all members, change your mind. You can have a yes vote. I would look forward to stand in solidarity with each and every one of you that decides to pass this on to the next committee. Thank you.
Further discussion to House File 3409 as amended. Vice Chair Hill.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. In a very similar fashion to Representative Gottfried, I'm surprised. I'm shocked. Many of you have heard me say this far too many times, but for 25 years, I've been proud to be a public school teacher. And the idea that we serve every single child is what gets me excited to go to work every day. And this idea that we're hearing that idea doesn't ring true for each of the committee members here at the Horseshoe is really surprising to me. And so as we move forward, this is about ensuring that everybody has rights, every child has rights. It's not just the tall kids, it's not just the smart kids, it's not just the you fill in the blank kids. It's every single child. And as we look forward, I hope we can find ways to partner to demonstrate that we are a state that believes that across the board. So thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hill, I want to thank you for saying that not just the tall kids get an education. Honestly, listen, this is already codified in U.S. Constitution. So to me, this bill is kind of irrelevant, and I feel like it's kind of more theatrics than anything, like that we're just using this as a stunt to prove a point that's already been proven in Constitution. So I stand with the chair, Chair Bennett, and urge a no vote.
Representative Mueller. Sorry, I was just excited. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to name what we've talked about this before. We need to name what's happening. The reason that this bill is coming is because that piece of our law is under threat. Our students are under threat right now. And so that is why we have to make sure that in this our state, we are double downing on all of our protections for students. And so, yes, I agree with you, Representative Roach. Like, this is, you know, codified. But that's in a context that we aren't seeing what we're seeing here in Minnesota. And so I just would encourage a yes vote. It is disheartening that we as education policy in this space would not just support every single student and believe them when they tell us what is going on.
Further discussion? Chair Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Sensenmiller, thank you for bringing this forward. I believe that is a sincere reason you are, and my colleagues over here too. And I have to agree with Representative Hill that every child deserves an opportunity to learn. And that's happening right now. And if we made a law for everything that's not happening, we would have so many laws that we'd be here year round, which I don't agree that we should be here year round. So honestly, I see this as a solution looking for a problem. I'm not saying that sarcastically. If we saw a lot of evidence of, you know, immigration authorities going into schools and pulling kids out of schools, or schools expelling students based on their immigration status, I think we'd be having different discussions right now. But we are not seeing that evidence. So I feel very strongly that we shouldn't be making laws just kind of to to make them, to make a statement or however we might say that. So I'm just going to say that this bill is mandating schools to solve a problem that they didn't ask for, nor did they create, nor are the issues happening that the bill is trying to address. We haven't heard that testimony on any of those things. The suggestion that our schools are refusing to comply with federal law somehow is, I think, kind of insulting to our schools. And I don't think it was meant that way. But when I read it, I just thought, wow, this is like our schools are doing terrible things, and they're not. So additionally, I don't believe the bill is necessary because the Attorney General, our own Minnesota Attorney General, issued guidance last year. It was on February 14th, Valentine's Day of 2025. And under that guidance, that the Attorney General affirmed what our schools are currently following: access to free public education under federal law and state law. Schools cannot discourage or deny access based on immigration status. Student policy is protected under federal and state law. The federal government cannot compel state or local officials to administer or enforce a federal program. So there, and then there's guidance also responding to requests for student information, responding to requests to meet or interview with students, and how schools can support their students and communities. So our government has issued guidance on this. I guess we could have put that guidance into, it's just not necessary what I'm seeing here. We don't need another set of mandates for our schools. And again, like I was saying, I believe our schools are trapped right now into political disputes that they just don't deserve to be a part of. I will say that Chair Crenshaw, Vice Chair Bakeberg, Vice Chair Mueller, and myself, we have already sent a letter to Secretary Noem and Mr. Horman requesting federal officials to take care to avoid areas that are commonly associated with schools. That includes locations for extracurricular activities and school transportation, including regular school bus stops. I believe dialogue like that is the way to address this issue instead of creating a law that I don't see as necessary. Just to give a little bit of context, we have had some issues in the Department of Ed, for example, where the MDE learned that they employed at the federal level or at director level a foreign national with at least two deportation orders on his record. And he was convicted of sexually assaulting a woman while she slept. So that's an example of issues with our department. And even last year, we had a 22-year-old man, it was at White Bear Lake, I believe, who issued a fake birth certificate and was in our schools. I believe this bill would actually make it harder for schools to verify the identity of enrolling students. That person, that man, was later accused of unlawful conduct involving interactions with minors. So we've just had issues, examples there of context of things that this bill could interfere with. But I'm just going to reiterate that we don't need a bill where we don't have a problem. So I am, again, going to encourage a no vote.
I will hand it over to Rep. Sensenmaier for a last word. But I am going to try to say a few words myself. And first off, thank Representative Sensenmaier. We did take extensive testimony providing the need for this bill last week that I, for one, have not been able to stop thinking about. I think about it all day and all night. So in this bill, I think it's important to remind people that a Supreme Court decision can be changed. For example, Plessy versus Ferguson was blessedly changed. That was something that made our country better when the Supreme Court changed its mind. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court has also changed its mind in the opposite direction. And so I think this bill really goes towards making sure that we are putting in those protections in place already. This is just a bill that ensures that schools are for our children and for their learning and their opportunity for all students. I have not heard of districts saying this is an additional mandate because they are already protecting all of our students. So I think this is a great bill. I would encourage members to vote yes on this bill and Representative Sensenmaier before we all decide if we're voting yes or no. I will hand it to you for the last word.
Thank you, Chair Jordan, and thank you, members, for the robust discussion today. You know, I would say, first of all, that I know you withdrew the amendment, but I welcome the amendment. I am glad to see that my colleagues on the other side of the aisle stand by our commitment to educating all students. I'm glad that we can agree that Brown v. Board of Education decision or the Plyler v. Doe decision represent what we still believe about all students that should be served by schools. You know, when I brought this bill, one of the reasons that I brought it was actually separate from anything that has happened here in Minnesota in the last couple months. It's that 10 states have had legislation introduced by the GOP that takes away the right of every kid to get an education. You know, I heard a story in Texas about legislation that was, you know, saying undocumented students should pay for their education. Let's send them a bill. Let's make them come to the schoolhouse with their money ready. So I'm glad that we don't have that Republican Party here in Minnesota. I hope we don't have that Republican Party here in the future. I hope we can just set a floor that says, you know, maybe we don't think that undocumented people should get health care. Maybe we don't think that they should get these services. But at least we can agree that kids that came here lots of times through no actions of their own, through no decision-making of their own, deserve to be educated. Like, I'm glad that we have that on the legislative record. And, you know, apologies for maybe being a little scared that in the future we might not all be there, because what I have seen from the last 2 months in the actions of the federal government make me really worried that we cannot even have a floor that says all kids deserve to be educated, all kids deserve to be safe. When I got to a bus stop just a few minutes after a five-year-old from Columbia Heights then was taken to Texas, that makes me worried about where our state is headed and where we as leaders and what we are allowing to happen to kids. When I hear a story about two kids from that same school from Columbia Heights seeing each other across a detention center cafeteria and saying, hey, I recognize that kid from my class, I recognize that kid from my school in Minnesota, that makes me worried that in the direction we are heading, we will not all be able in the future to agree that every kid in Minnesota should get an education. So it is disappointing that we cannot continue this conversation, continue this on. It is disappointing in light of the incredible testimony that we heard from parents, educators, and students here last week. But I am happy that we have on the legislative record that right now we have a GOP that does agree that all students should be entitled to a public education here in Minnesota. I hope that it stays that way. And if you truly believe that, I don't believe you have anything to lose by voting yes today. Thank you.
With that, I will motion to re-refer House File 3409 to the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee and that a roll call be taken. Ms. Keller, will you please take the roll?
Yes. All right. Co-Chair Bennett?
No.
Co-Chair Bennett? No. Co-Chair Jordan?
Aye.
Co-Chair Jordan? Aye. Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Hill? Aye. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Mueller no. Representative Bierman.
Bierman aye.
Representative Bierman aye. Representative DePell.
No.
Representative DePell no. Representative Falconer.
Falconer yes.
Representative Falconer yes. Representative Fogelman.
No.
Representative Fogelman no. Representative Gordon.
No.
Representative Gordon no. Representative Gottfried.
Gottfried aye.
Representative Gottfried aye. Representative Green.
Green yes.
Representative Green, yes. Representative Keeler?
Keeler, yes.
Representative Keeler, yes. Representative Lawrence?
Lawrence, no.
Representative Lawrence, no. Representative Roach?
Roach, no.
Representative Roach, no.
There being 7 ayes and 7 nays, the motion does not prevail. I will now lay the bill over. Thank you, Representative Sensenmaher, for your time. We are now going to move to a presentation on gun violence in schools and safety responses by Nicole Hockley, the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Sandy Hook Promise. And Nicole, I know that you are joining us remotely. Welcome to the committee. When you're ready, please state your name for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Nicole Hockley. I am the co-founder and CEO of Sandy Hook Promise. I'm going to share my screen now. So thank you very much, co-chairs Jordan and Bennett and members of the committee for this opportunity to join you today. As I said, my name is Nicole Hockley. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Sandy Hook Promise. On December 14th, 2012, my youngest son, Dylan, a first grader at Sandy Hook Elementary School, did not come home. On that day, my beautiful boy, with his big blue eyes and an infectious giggle, was shot 5 times and died instantly in the arms of his special education assistant, who also lost her life trying to protect him. In total that day, 6 educators and 20 first graders, innocent 6 and 7-year-old children, were murdered. 1 month later, I helped launch Sandy Hook Promise. Our vision is simple, a future where no child worries about being shot at school, at home, or in their community. Our mission is to educate and empower youth and adults to prevent violence in schools, homes, and communities. Today, I'm here not only as Dylan's mom, but also as someone whose heart is heavy for the families affected by the shooting at Annunciation Catholic School. Heavy for the parents whose children did not come home that day. And heavy for each of you. Heavy because the facts of what took place last August are gut-wrenching, and you will be called upon to consider them over and over again. Heavy because each of you has the hard responsibility of sitting with those facts while also bringing clear eyes, a clear heart, and a nonpartisan commitment to doing what's right for Minnesota's children. Heavy because in times like these, our individual and collective grief can blur even the best solutions, making what is a delicate and hard conversation even harder. But I'm also hopeful, that you will find the courage to take those next steps boldly, thoughtfully, and also together, because Minnesota needs bipartisan solutions that work. Sandy Hook Promise stands ready to take those steps with you. We're here to share what we've learned about the state of gun violence in schools, and more importantly, what we know works to prevent it, with the hope that it will help you weave together the bipartisan solution that you're looking for. So I'm going to start with a few facts. Firearms are the leading cause of death for children in the U.S. Each day, 12 children die from gun violence in America, and another 32 are shot and injured. There have been more than 428 school shootings since Columbine in 1999, which impacts nearly 394,000 students. After the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, I learned a lot about the shooter, the many warning signs he showed throughout his life, the missed opportunities to intervene, and the most painful truth of all, that what happened at my children's school was not just another tragedy, it was preventable. The fact that according to the U.S. Secret Service's National Threat Assessment Center, between 2016 and 2020, about 76% of perpetrators of mass violence exhibited warning signs beforehand. They said something or posted something, behaved in ways that concerned others. But in most cases, those signals never reached anyone who could help. Yes, these facts are bleak, but they're also why Sandy Hook Promise exists. We focus on prevention backed by evidence. We've created sophisticated but also readily accessible solutions that can help Minnesota and the nation prevent school shootings. These solutions live in the violence prevention programs that we provide, mostly at no cost to schools. Our comprehensive suite of violence prevention programs educates and empowers students, educators, parents, and caregivers to play an active role in ending school shootings and other forms of violence. They live in the model policies that we draft and the ways in which we partner with legislators, Republican and Democrat alike, to refine them so that they reflect the unique needs of the state and of the nation. They live in the movement building we undertake in which everyone across every age, gender, race, nationality, and political party is welcome. I share this insight to demonstrate that even when the facts are bleak, Sandy Hook promises proof that it's worthwhile to stay the course and also paramount to examine the options with those clear eyes and clear hearts and a nonpartisan will in order to co-create bipartisan solutions. And here's the good news. This committee and this legislature as a whole can also be that proof. But where will you start when it comes to formulating a balanced and effective school safety response? The options you've probably already learned are many. That is a fact. But it is also a fact that not all options are created equal. Sandy Hook Promise's experience and expertise tells us the best options are grounded in 2 critical features, prevention and evidence. I'll start with prevention. Prevention is proactive. It stops violence because it gets ahead of and stays ahead of harms and fatalities. Prevention arrives at the safety outcomes we all want well before violence raises its head. But let me put a finer point on this. As a country, we've become very good at response, how to react once a crisis begins, how to secure buildings, how to respond to danger when it's already inside. That's protection, not prevention. Protection has a role, yes, and everyone should have options for remaining safe once a dangerous act is unfolding. And while protection and prevention are not incompatible, they are also not the same thing. Prevention is what keeps students from ever facing these moments in the first place. Prevention is more effective and less costly and far less traumatic for children. The type of protection that Sandy Hook Promise recommends is that which is evidence-based. And speaking of evidence-based, just as prevention matters, so too does proof of concept matter. Evidence that a given approach works should be on the table before the state or any of the schools within it choose a particular school safety option. Evidence that a given approach works should be required, not an optional nice to have. Our children deserve evidence-based school safety solutions that are proven to work. Minnesota already requires schools to have school safety plans. That is an important point because it means that Minnesota is already off to a good start with a strong foundation. As it relates to these plans, Sandy Hook Promise recommends they be grounded in evidence. This approach better ensures that proven safety solutions are folded into the fabric of how Minnesota schools operate. There's no better time than now to ensure that when schools plan their response to human-caused dangers, such as a school shooting, that they ground their response in approaches that have been proven to work. To put it bluntly, no parent, student, school, or community should have to learn in the middle of a crisis that their child's school relied on measures that sounded reasonable but didn't work. To help move Minnesota schools towards the adoption of evidence-based school safety plans, you can position a trusted state agency of your choosing to be the bridge. This agency should be called upon to help schools critically examine their existing school safety plans with the goal of shifting them from sound and reasonable, for instance, to sound, reasonable, and evidence-based. From the Sandy Hook Promise perspective, the Minnesota School Safety Center, housed in the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, could be a strong choice given their experts in school safety plans. The next evidence-based school safety solution Sandy Hook proposes for your consideration is a student-centered anonymous reporting. And I want to be clear, anonymous reporting is not just a platform, such as a website through which tips can be submitted, or an 800 line, or the option to send a text message. What I'm talking about is an anonymous reporting program. An effective anonymous reporting program pairs a 24/7 platform with age-appropriate evidence-based training that teaches students how to recognize when someone's at risk of harming themselves, others, or both, and the importance of acting quickly, telling a trusted adult when they know so that an action can be taken. This is not about asking kids to assess threats, investigate social media, or decide on their own whether someone is serious enough. It's not about putting adult responsibilities on children. It's about empowering them with a simple, safe, and effective way to speak up. And when students are given an upstream prevention tool, such as an anonymous reporting program, coupled with evidence-based training, they do the right thing. Our research shows time and time again that the training is the most critical component. Without training, an anonymous system mostly becomes unknown and underutilized. But when students are trained each year on what to look for and how to act, you feel empowered and capable. As our research partners at the University of Michigan say, the more you train, the more you get. Students begin to see speaking up as helping rather than getting someone in trouble. They begin to speak up in a way to help prevent acts of violence. They begin to speak up when they themselves are in need of help. A well-rounded anonymous reporting program translates into life-saving moments, and it also shifts school culture and climate. Sandy Hook Promise has seen it, and because students use anonymous reporting as a helping tool, they rarely submit false reports. I highlight this fact because despite adult concerns, false reports are rare Students do not weaponize anonymity. They use it responsibly. Something else they use it for? To say something in a timely manner when they learn someone is planning to carry out a school shooting. We have evidence of this. Across the nation, schools using Sandy Hook Promise's Say Something Anonymous reporting system have averted a total of 19 credible planned school shooting attacks and over 1,200 imminent youth suicides. In each of these cases, tips came through our system, were triaged by trained crisis counselors available 24/7, 365 at our accredited crisis center in Florida. They then work with the school teams and local law enforcement to create life-saving interventions. For us to say we've stopped a planned school attack, the tip has to come to us first before any other body, and law enforcement needs to then independently confirm that the person making the threat had the plans and the means, in this context a firearm, by which to carry out the threat. Clearly, an anonymous reporting program can be a vital life-saving tool. This isn't hypothetical, these are lives saved. And you'll be happy to know that Minnesota schools believe this as well. Many Minnesotan students are already showing how our system works. These students are helping shape the safety, current and future, of their schools, homes, and communities. This is possible for all students who are given access to the type of anonymous reporting program our expertise tells us is most effective, such as the option to report should be available via website, phone, and text. The ability to report should be available 24/7, 365, not just during school hours. Inbound tips should be received and acted upon in real time by trained crisis counselors, trained in knowing how to triage tips and build trusting relationships with tipsters. These counselors should be multilingual, as should any technological platform they use. School safety teams should be identified, trained, and prepared to receive and respond to tip information from the crisis counselors. And the school safety team and the trained crisis counselors should know when and what tips to immediately forward to law enforcement. After all, not every report requires police involvement, but every report deserves to be heard. In line with the national trend, Minnesota students are not misusing anonymous reporting. They are using it responsibly. This is not surprising because experience tells us students want to help, although not always in ways that are flashy or public facing. Something else students want is to get it right. Anonymous reporting and training gives students a way to overcome doubt, the same doubt we all feel when we say, it's probably nothing, or I don't want to overreact. That doubt leads to silence, and silence can be deadly. An effective anonymous reporting program changes that. It can be a reliable way for students to tell a trusted adult what they know. And this step alone, giving everything you've just heard about anonymous reporting programs in action, can increase the safety of Minnesota students. And if you normalize an anonymous reporting program, increased safety can take root not just in their schools, but also in their homes and communities. And all students deserve that. I want to close by returning to one statistic. That was the nearly 394,000 students that have experienced gun violence at school since Columbine. And I ask you to consider how many incidents never happen because someone said something. We know of at least 19 prevented because of Sandy Hook Promise's program, and how many might still be prevented. Gun violence should never be part of the school experience. It's not inevitable, it is preventable. And that is what we should expect and demand for our children. I remain hopeful that this legislature will choose the bipartisan, evidence-based school safety solutions at your fingertips. Hopeful that Minnesota students of all ages believe once again that their schools are safe places and always will be. Hopeful that parents will trust that their children will come home from school at the end of the day. And my greatest hope of all is that you will prove that hope right. Thank you for your time and for your commitment to keeping Minnesota's children safe.
Thank you, CEO Hockley, and thank you for being brave and sharing your story. Please accept on my behalf our apologies and sympathy for you and what your family has gone through, and hope that no family goes through what you have gone through.
Thank you.
I have another remote testifier, Emily Douk from Mankato. Emily, are you with us? Yes. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee and proceed.
Okay. Hello, Education Policy Committee. My name is Emily Douk, and I am from Mankato, Minnesota. I am here to testify in support of House File 3401 and other measures to protect students from gun violence. I am a high school math teacher in southern Minnesota. One of the expectations of my profession is that myself or someone I am close to will be involved in a school shooting. Think I'm exaggerating? Here is what I experienced in 2024 and 2025. February 2024, a student I had helped with math just weeks before was charged with murder and has since been convicted and sentenced. December 2024, a student who was in my advanced algebra class the year before was charged with murder and has since been convicted and sentenced. November 2025, a family member of a student was murdered. Scariest of all, in December 2024, a student brought a gun in his backpack into my intermediate algebra classroom. Each of these incidents happened within 2 miles of my school building. Each of these incidents involved a current or recent student of mine. Each of these incidents involved a teenager. Each of these incidents involved a gun. I want to be very clear that schools are doing everything they possibly can to prevent gun violence from entering the buildings. They are investing in safe and secure entrances. They are providing mental health services when funding allows. They are creating strong partnerships with school resource officers and local police. The incident in December 2024, where a student brought a gun into my classroom, was a testament to that work. There was a gun in the school building, and there was no school shooting. But that's not enough. The teenager never should have had the gun in the first place. Schools cannot prevent gun violence alone. We need the help of the legislature. This is my message to legislators on all ends of the political spectrum. The only way the epidemic of school shootings will end is if our elected leaders choose to act. Think the problem is the guns? Create stricter gun laws. Think the problem is the people and not the guns? Write laws that support the people. There are solutions to this problem, but action needs to be taken during this legislative session. Failing to act ensures that we will continue to see school shootings. Failing to act ensures that more students and teachers will be impacted by gun violence. Failing to act ensures that eventually every Minnesotan will be touched by gun violence. I would like to end my testimony the way I started. As an educator in Minnesota, my personal experience makes it clear to me that it is only a matter of time before I or someone I am close to is directly involved in a school shooting. As the elected leaders of Minnesota, you have the power to change that trajectory. Write bills, hold votes, and make changes to Minnesota laws so that we can end gun violence in schools. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and your service, Ms. Douk. I also know that in person we have Aurora Vasquez, who is a Senior Vice President of State Policy, who can take any questions on the presentation we just heard. Is there any questions from members? Otherwise, we'll proceed to our bills. Our first bill up, well, I guess second bill at this point, is House File 3401 by Representative Green. Please make your way to the testimony table, and when you're settled, please move your bill and introduce it.
I think I'll have these guys just present here, and then we'll just have them here. Okay. We'll have Logan, mm-hmm. Maybe Davis is out of the initiative.
Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair Jordan. I am here to present House File.
Maybe before you do that, would you like to make a motion to move your bill before the committee and to which committee you would like it to go to?
Yes, Chair Jordan. I even wrote that down. I would like to move House File 341 to be referred to public safety.
Thank you. Proceed with your bill introduction.
Thank you, Chair. So I am here today to present House File 3401. I have some co-presenters with me. This is a group of students that I've been working with for nearly a year on some gun violence prevention measures. And I am having them actually present the bill with me, not just be testifiers, because we have really worked through and worked with partners on this. And so they are here to help present the present this bill. One thing before we get started, though, is really this bill is about preventing avoidable tragedies at schools, near students, and before they begin. So I'm going to pass it off to Logan. They'll say their name before they speak.
Great. Thank you. My name is Logan Bracken, and I'm a senior at Edina High School. We are here to present House File 3401, which will do two main things. First, this bill establishes stricter storage requirements for firearms on school property when stored in vehicles. Right now, Minnesota law is general and leaves too much room for interpretation when it comes to firearms in cars. Our bill will require that firearms, when in a vehicle on school property, must be unloaded, secured in a locked container or safe designed to resist tampering and unauthorized access, and placed in a locked trunk compartment. If no trunk is available, the firearm must be out of plain sight within the vehicle. This bill will also extend the same storage protections to Minnesota State High School League sanctioned events, even if the events are off school ground, such as hockey games at the city's local arena. Second, under the existing law, principals have the authority to approve an individual to carry a firearm on school property. This bill will remove the language that unnecessary exception. That responsibility is not only a huge liability, but unfair for our administrators. We know how much is already on their plates, and there is zero need for them to feel pressure in deciding whether guns are allowed on campus and who should or who shouldn't be allowed to carry one. Their focus should be purely on their students. That said, House File 3401 will not restrict identified and purposeful firearm carry within a school facility like a school resource officer or a color guard. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes. Hi, my name is Anushka Narayalwala, and I'm a senior at Edina High School. These loopholes in our current law create unnecessary risk on school property, and that is why all of us are here. The data shows that limiting access to firearms saves lives, and our schools should not be a place where access to firearms is even a possibility.
Please restate your name for the record as well. Thank you.
My name is Davis Donner. I'm also a senior at Edina High School. Firearms are stolen out of vehicles every 9 minutes in the U.S., which accounts to over 350,000 annually. We also know that firearm access is linked to suicides. Over half of every suicide in the U.S. occurs with a firearm. And just recently in North Carolina, a student left the school building and accessed a firearm in an unsecured vehicle and shot himself dead in the parking lot. And it's that type of preventable violence that this bill will prevent in Minnesota. A recent survey that was done of nine states, Minnesota included, found that 27% of firearm owners reported storing their firearms in a vehicle, of which 22% reported some unsecured storage, which means not in a locked glove box at a minimum. That was that 22%. And of that 78% that reported storing in a locked vehicle, that included a glove box, which is not a safe place to store a firearm. Thousands of firearms are stored in Fremont glove box. Glove boxes are quite trivial to break into. They're not secure enough for a deadly weapon.
Principals and administrators should be focused on students, not guns. Giving the authority to principals to decide who can carry weapons is risky and not a good idea. And school leaders agree. Emergency personnel arriving at schools for any reason, including to respond to active shooters, do not know who is carrying a weapon. So why should we remove the principal authority to make the sole decision to allow firearms in school facilities? That was part of that. And most importantly, when we asked our Minnesota secondary principals across the state, they told us that they do not want this authority. Their letter of support for this bill is in your packet.
Rep. Representative Green, is this still part of your presentation? Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
My name is Aditi Jha, and I'm a junior in high school. This bill isn't just about preventing illegal access to firearms. It's about us. Students want to go to school and know that we are safe. As students, this is important to us because we no longer want to worry that a lockdown could mean we couldn't see our families, friends, and loved ones again. A freshman whom I was mentoring asked me, "How do we stay safe at school?" It's now casual conversation. That's not right. I don't want to feel the need to survey my classrooms to establish where and how I can get myself to safety if the worst were to happen. Worries about security affect our ability to focus and to learn in school. Research from Northwestern University shows the rising rate of depression and anxiety in students is linked to a rise in school shootings. The chief argument against safe storage is self-defense. Proponents bring up a variety of unrealistic fantasy scenarios of the shooter on school property who is stopped by the peaceful gun owner with an easily accessible loaded gun in their car. And you might think to yourself, I've never heard of that happen, and you would be correct. These fake situations are empirically disproven. According to Everytown Research, defensive gun uses occur in fewer than 1% of all crimes. And when they are used defensively, only 20% of the time it is against people who also have a gun. And not only are these scenarios very unlikely to happen, but adding another gun into the mix actually makes things more dangerous. Crime victims who respond with a gun are less likely to avoid injury and more likely to lose property. Clearly, given that statistically significant gun theft from cars has led to everything from unintentional shootings to youth suicides, there is infinitely more danger in not safely storing a gun.
Chair Jordan, we're almost
okay
to the end.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Hi, I'm Alvi, a senior at Edina High School. Although we may never know which exact tragedies we prevented, we do know that there's a clear correlation between unsecured guns and increased violence. In states with strong safe storage laws, gun-related homicides have fallen by over 19.4%, and general gun-related injuries have fallen by over 10%. Conversely, states with weak safe storage laws face a near 18 times increase in gun theft. Minnesota still lags behind more than 10 states in terms of safe storage. So, we're asking you all to make a responsible decision to establish basic safe storage requirements for guns on school property in a country where the leading cause of death for teens has been firearms for the last 6 years.
Welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
My name is Matthew Smeaton. I'm a senior at the University of Minnesota. In preparing House File 3401, we consulted with the Minnesota County Attorney Association on the bill's language. We have taken many of their considerations into account and continue to work with them to develop this bill. In your packet, you will find several letters of support for this legislation. As you heard, principals across the state are in support, county commissioners, school administrators, our superintendents, and advocacy groups. I encourage you to read our Star Tribune editorial piece that ran this fall. We've also been working with Hennepin County Sheriff Dawana Witt since the summer, and she will join us now to speak about this legislation.
And we will proceed to that public testimony.
Yes.
And starting with Sheriff Witt, Sheriff Dawana Witt, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Madam Chair. Sheriff Dawana Witt, Hennepin County. I am proud to support this bill to establish uniform storage requirements for firearms on school property. Last August, Representative Green came to my office with a group of high school students, these wonderful students that you hear, just heard, that are sitting behind me. Those students are here with me today to let you know how passionately they believe in policy change. I would also like to add that I have a student advisory group. These are students between the grades in grades 10 through 12th grade throughout different schools in Hennepin County. One of the questions I asked of those students are, what are the top priorities that you would like to see in your districts? And this is all the way from Rogers into Eden Prairie. Gun violence came up on every last one of their list, came up in the top five. Our kids are afraid. They are expecting us as adults to do something to help them. It meant a lot, though, to me as a public safety leader to weigh in from the beginning of this process, since it is law enforcement that ultimately has to enforce the measures should it become law. This bill is clear and it's practical for both school and law enforcement. It creates consistent expectations statewide, which makes compliance easier and enforcement more fair. As a former school resource officer, best part of my career, hands down, I can tell you that inconsistent gun policies from one school to another can create problems for law enforcement. This law will help create a clear standard for the public to follow and our agencies to enforce. Safe storage laws address one of the most common pathways by which guns end up in the wrong hands, the theft of unsecured firearms. It's great we have people that are law-abiding and legally able to carry, but we also have people that are out there looking for opportunities to take those weapons and use them in ways that they should not be used. When we think about vehicles being a primary source for stolen guns used in crimes, that we know, a trend that has been significantly increasing over the past decade. In 2025 alone, my agency sees 697 illegally possessed firearms, and a great number of those were stolen. I believe that we can significantly reduce this problem, and I am confident if passed, this bill we are discussing today can save lives. The wrong answer is to do nothing. I'm not expecting that one bill will save all lives, but to do nothing should not be an option. For that reason, I support this bill and urge you to pass it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sheriff Witt, for your testimony and your service. Next on my list is Megan Walsh from the University of Minnesota, followed by Mia Olson from the Bloomington School Board. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Professor Walsh. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, and Representative Green. My name is Megan Walsh. I am a visiting assistant clinical professor of law at the University of Minnesota Law School. My expertise, research, and teaching focuses on the Second Amendment and the law of firearms. And I also am the director of the Gun Violence Prevention Clinic at the University of Minnesota Law School. My clinic has successfully defended Minnesota gun laws against constitutional challenges in approximately 50 cases in its first 3 years. I'm joined by my student, Claire Albrecht. She is a third-year student at Minnesota Law. She's a student attorney in the Gun Violence Prevention Clinic. And she recently filed a brief at the Minnesota Court of Appeals defending a Minnesota gun law against a Second Amendment challenge.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Claire Albrecht. I'm a student at the University of Minnesota Law School. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3401. From a constitutional perspective, this bill fits squarely within well-established Second Amendment doctrine. In District of Columbia v. Heller, the United States Supreme Court made clear that nothing in their opinion should be taken to cast doubt on long-standing prohibitions on laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools. That language is significant. It signals that the restrictions on firearms in schools are presumptively lawful. The Eighth Circuit, the Federal Circuit, which includes Minnesota, has held that the longstanding prohibitions on that the Supreme Court recognized in Heller are not just presumptively lawful, but fully lawful. Schools have long been recognized as sensitive places, and courts across the country have consistently upheld firearm prohibitions in these environments. This bill extends that same framework to Minnesota State High School League events when students are gathered for athletic and fine arts activities. This is a logical and legally defensible extension. The purpose of naming schools as sensitive places where firearms are prohibited is to ensure that they are safe havens for students. The same sensitive places principles apply when students are competing in a gym, performing in an auditorium, or participating in a school-sponsored event off campus. This bill also specifies how a firearm should be stored in a vehicle in a school parking lot. Since the Supreme Court's decision in Heller, multiple courts have upheld secure storage requirements as consistent with the Second Amendment. Requiring a firearm to be unloaded and securely stored in a vehicle while on school grounds is a more limited measure than regulating storage inside the home. If the Constitution permits a complete prohibition on firearms in schools as sensitive places, it surely permits the lesser requirement that firearms be securely stored while on school property. In short, this bill operates within the constitutional boundaries recognized in Heller and reflects the same lawful restrictions on carrying firearms in sensitive places already embedded in Minnesota law.
Regarding the bill's elimination of principals' discretion to permit firearms on school campuses, I note that the current law does not require specific training above what is required to obtain a permit to carry, and no specific training for how to carry and use a weapon safely in a school setting. It also does not require notice to parents or even other staff or faculty when a staff member or other authorized person is carrying in the school. The discretion given to school officials leaves school districts and officials subject to potential litigation and liability. Significant litigation has followed nearly every mass shooting for several decades at this point. For, by way of example, in the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas in Parkland, Florida, the school district settled with families of victims for $25 million. Virginia Tech settled with families for $11 million, and families affected by the school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, have filed suit seeking $27 billion. This lawsuit has not yet been resolved. We have also seen multiple incidents across the country in which individuals who are authorized to carry a firearm onto a school have left that firearm unattended and children at the school have accessed it, including a few years ago in Maplewood in 2018, there was a situation where a peace officer carried a firearm into a school and a child was able to discharge it. Minnesota law does provide some immunity to school officials, but that immunity is not absolute. That analysis is also very fact-specific, and that means that any litigation over whether or not this immunity would apply to a school discretionary decision would likely take years and cost significant expense to the school district.
Professor Walsh, can you please wrap up your testimony?
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list for testimony is Mia Olson from the Boynton School Board, followed by Roger Aronson. Welcome to the committee, School Board Member Olson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
It's actually Maya Olson.
Maya, I apologize.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Education Policy Committee. My name is Maya Olson and I reside in Bloomington, where I've been a substitute teacher since 1996, a school board member first elected in 2019 and again in 2023. I have also been a gun safety advocate, a violence prevention advocate since the tragic shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in 2012. Having been a substitute teacher for 30 years, I have experienced countless lockdown drills with students from pre-K through middle school, including students with a variety of needs, including students in wheelchairs, students with sensory issues, and students who have already experienced a background of trauma. As a teacher and as a school board member, I must consider the safety needs of our students as our number one priority. These roles, in addition to having once been a parent of school-aged children, have made me unable to understand why we must continue to teach students how to react to school shootings while legislators with the power to actually help prevent school shootings have continued to fight over any new legislation. I am grateful that you are all here today, allowing for a hearing on the topic of safe gun storage on school property. Thank you. There are many preventative measures that we can take to make our schools safer, and safe firearm storage is one of them. As long as our state is normalizing gun ownership, and gun ownership is consistently on the rise, we must normalize safe gun storage and update our gun storage laws. I'm asking you to please pass HF 3401, and I would like to thank my Bloomington representative, Julie Green, for bringing it forward, along with her many co-authors. I hold no magical thinking that gun violence will end with the passing of this or any new laws. However, it is our job as leaders, educators, and adults to do everything we can to protect the lives of our students. Doing nothing takes away their belief in us, which is why so many of them are stepping up to do something about it themselves, and it is why you are hearing from several students today. Thank you for listening to them.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on my list is Roger Aronson, followed by Carla Gillespie. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Aronson. I think I said that right. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Roger Arnson. As you can see on the list here, it lists me as the lobbyist for the Elementary Principal Association. I also represent the Secondary Principal Association and the High School League. We've appreciated the opportunity to work with Representative Green on this bill. The language that's actually in here has been around for a long time. I think 20 years ago, the biggest debate on this bill had to do with people possessing a gun in their car and moving it to the trunk. That's still in here at this particular time. For something that was relevant at the time that we can no longer put our finger on, there was a provision in here that said the principal could actually authorize someone to have a gun in the school. Representative Green asked us about that. The Secondary Principals Board met in January and said, we'd like to have that provision taken out. Actually, it's more work saying no, and let's just make it a hard no as we move along with that. Just very, very straightforward about taking that out. One thing I might mention, and to the High School League, there's a provision in here about notice that we put at our events. We actually have metal detectors at most of the events that we have. I mean, we do have the notice pieces. There's a little piece that is kind of buried in the statute here that has to do with gun clubs. The Clay target shooting, we have 8,000 students that participate, 360 schools. I think that that's covered in the statute where it talks about target practice, but we may want to talk about that again. That is done at a private facility when we do that tournament annually, but just something to be aware of. It. And you're not trying to get to that at all in terms of the particular statute. So any move that we make on this, and I just want to conclude with, we have very strict policies about guns in schools. If you have a BB gun, you have a replica, these are locked down. We are calling 911. We are holding people on that. And that's below the firearm piece. I mean, we take this very, very seriously day in, day out. And any steps that go forward to making schools safer, those are all good steps, whether they're large, small, whatever. So we strongly support the language. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. And then last on my list is Carla Gillespie from Moms Demand Action. Welcome to committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Carla Gillespie. I'm a volunteer with Moms Demand Action. Chair Jordan, committee members, here today to ask you to support this bill, which would strengthen firearm standards on school property. Schools should be learning environments that are safe for children, teachers, and staff, and student athletes and performers and fans should be able to attend sporting events and performances, whether they're at home or away, secure in the knowledge that firearms will not be allowed in the venue. The bill establishes clear uniform storage requirements for firearms lawfully permitted on school property that reflect secure storage standards followed by all responsible gun owners, and expands the definition of school property to include Minnesota State High School League event venues. Research shows that secure storage is one of the most effective ways to reduce the firearms that are later used to commit crimes, the accidental discharge of a weapon, which often results in a tragedy, and the self-inflicted injury. It also shows that firearm injuries are the leading cause of death among children and teens. I urge this committee to support this important piece of legislation. Thank you for considering my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. I believe there is an amendment before us. Chair Bennett, would you like to move your amendment and explain it?
Thank you. I just swallowed my mint that was in my mouth.
I understand. I'm juggling cough drops myself.
Yes. So, Madam Chair and members, the DE1 amendment would simplify and address a key change that I think we can all agree that should be made pertaining to the possession of firearms on school property. And we can certainly understand why school principals do not want to have that be the ones giving this permission and so on. So in discussing with my colleagues and other educators, as well as me being a lifetime educator, we regard that the superintendent should be the one who makes that decision and who will likely do so as authorized by a school board. So this allows for a uniform policy throughout the district and a single point decision maker where community leaders can give feedback and that person can direct and help make these decisions. Charter schools in this amendment, obviously charter schools do not have superintendents or principals, so the language is clarified around that decision for charter schools. The underlying bill does have several changes to the possession on school property where the implications we don't believe are totally clear. I think some of my members have questions on that, but at this point, we'd like more discussion and help make other changes. I think there are points of agreement that we have in this bill. So therefore, we offer the DE1 amendment to move forward on a reasonable revision of the current law and would welcome opportunity to continue discussion and with the author and help this bill to be able to move forward when we can come to some reasonable solutions. Thank you.
Representative Green to the DE1 amendment. And I believe you have a testifier on the DE1 amendment as well.
That's right. Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much, Co-Chair Bennett, for the amendment, too. I would like to bring up Valerie Doslin, who represents the superintendents.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Valerie Doslin. I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I would just like to express our opposition to this proposal for all of the reasons that you heard from the testifiers and from the sheriff and from Mr. Aronson. Administrators should be focused on students. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion to the DE1 amendment. And Chair Bennett, I will go back to you to move your amendment as well.
Would you like me to do that right now?
We can just do it when we do it at the end.
Okay, thanks.
Any discussion to the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, I will return to Representative Bennett to make her motion and to say any last words and then proceed to a vote.
Thank you. Again, we would agree to continue to work on this issue, but I would ask for support of the DE1 amendment and move that amendment forward. Thank you.
Representative Roach, do you have a comment on the amendment or the bill itself? Okay, great. We'll add you to the list. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Nay. The motion does not prevail. Discussion to the bill, starting with Representative DePell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question circles around non-public schools. As the board chair and founding member of a non-public school that does not have a school resource officer given to them. So functionally, we have no funding mechanism to harden a school, to have a school resource officer, to really have any protection whatsoever. It's part of the parents, the board, and the administrators to do this. So one thing that I want to make sure is that schools like the one that I've help found are protected, and I'm sure that everybody here agrees that they want that to be the case. But the first question that I would have is within that context, and since many of the schools that have had these atrocious attacks perpetrated on them are very similar, if not the same, to the type of school that I helped found, and so you can understand I'd be a little bit sensitive about this. I want these kids to be protected from crazy shooters. And with a non-public school, we have limited funds, as I mentioned. So I wonder, does this bill ban trained off-duty law enforcement members that may be parents of students? Does it ban faculty who have a permit to carry and are trained, vetted, and completely cleared? Does this ban a parent who has a carry permit to be able to defend these children? And then I have a follow-up question to that, and that is, if it does ban that and these non-public schools don't have a school resource officer and there is an active shooter and all these kids are huddled into rooms with no defense whatsoever and the hope that a police officer might respond and might be able to neutralize that shooter, how are they supposed to defend themselves and what hope do they have against that?
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative DePell, for that question. I'm gonna turn it over to nonpartisan staff to answer on the legalities of things. One of the things I wanna say that before we do that, though, is you know, part of the, at least the parking lot piece of this bill would adhere to all schools. And so that was something that doesn't cost anything, but just is a preventative measure. So I will pass it along.
And I will introduce Mr. Diebel, who is here to help us with some of these public safety issues that we don't always discuss in this committee. So Mr. Diebel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. So there are several questions in there, but I'll start with the licensed peace officer. There's an existing exception in the statute for a licensed peace officer. It does not say they need to be acting in their courses or duties. So an off-duty officer, as long as they're an active licensed peace officer, they would be able to carry a firearm in a school without the permission of the principal. So moving to permit to carry holders, current law does not allow permit to carry holders to carry in a school based on their permit alone. This bill would remove a provision that allows permit to carry holders who have the permission of the principal or the other person responsible for the school to carry in the school. So those, if this bill were enacted, those permit to carry holders would not be able to carry under the with the permission of the person responsible for that. And currently, permit to carry holders, when they're on school property, they're allowed to have their firearm, but they need to store it in their vehicle if they're leaving their vehicle. They cannot go into the school with it. Did that answer all of your questions?
Representative DePell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It does, and it raises a big concern for non-public schools, like Annunciation, like many other schools that we've seen, where this literally happened very recently. And so it's not theoretical, and it's actually very terrible and tragic and evil and grotesque that these acts would be perpetrated against schools and public, non-public. These are children. We've all agreed they should be treated with definitive respect. And so I would encourage hard thought and, you know, really, truly from my deepest sentiments that I wouldn't want these children trapped in rooms with an active shooter and nobody available to be able to defend them, especially if these people are properly vetted individuals who could defend those kids. It's just terrible to think about how that would turn out and has turned out. And I just don't want to see it happen again. And obviously, this is a personal issue to me. Thank you.
Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank the students that testified today. You know, as many of us in this room, you know, gun violence in school, no one wants that. Nobody wants to see any child harmed. I have a bigger concern, though, today that from what we got from House Research is that this bill would suggest that a law-abiding permit-to-carry holder, as a parent, could not lawfully have their firearm in the car. Yet we have somebody testifying here today who would be able to carry their gun, who should be upholding the Constitution, actively testifying against the rights of citizens to be able to have a firearm in their possession, in their vehicle, while they're picking up their child. I think that is a huge attack on our constitutional rights, and those individuals that have that viewpoint should be upholding the Constitution, not being an activist. I have a grave concern about this. I am a no vote on this, and any attack on the Second Amendment is despicable.
Mr. Diebel, could you please clarify your comments earlier?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, and I apologize if I was unclear. The permit to carry statute does allow you to carry your firearm in your car in a school parking lot. But if you leave your car to go into the school, you cannot carry your firearm with you. So you are permitted to have it with you as long as you're in your car with you. You don't need to secure store it at that point. It's when you leave your car, that's when you would have to securely store it. So,
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I want to pass it over to our sheriff.
Sheriff Witt.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative, and I appreciate your comments. I'm glad that he clarified that. I do think, though, actually, I believe very deeply, with firearms comes responsibility, and it is when you're separated from that firearm, it should be the owner's responsibility to make sure that it's secured. Again, we have to live in the reality of the world that there are people that are looking for those opportunities. And so to say, to leave a firearm not stored appropriately, I believe brings us greater issues as far as public safety goes. So again, thank you for clarifying. It's when you're separated. We already know that when you have it on your body, you're in the car. That's not the issue. It's when you are away from that weapon. You are responsible for making sure, or you should be, that it is secured safely. Thank you.
Representative Bell, you had another question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does this bill do anything to help non-public schools that aren't able to defend themselves? And what would the procedure be for a non-public school that doesn't have the resources to hire a security guard? What are the children supposed to do to defend themselves and the administration?
Representative Green.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you for that question. You know, I think it's a bigger conversation, and we've had this. I sit on Ed Finance with you as well. We've had a lot of conversations about a comprehensive approach to making sure all of our kids in our state are safe at school. And so, you know, this bill is not meant to in any way put children in harm. The research will tell you that, which we heard from testifiers today, that, you know, less than 1% of your being able to defend yourself with a gun, and that includes school shootings. And so I think that I would be welcome to continue this conversation and what we do with our non-public schools to make sure that there possibly could be grant money. There's different funds that maybe we could take a look at. But I think for this bill and what the intent of this is making sure that firearms are secure at all times and they don't get into the hands of the wrong people. And what we heard from law enforcement, and I've talked with the police chief union as well, and they're, you know, looking at this language, is that if you have someone in a school and they have a firearm on them, and you have an active shooter, and law enforcement comes in, you call 911, they don't know who is supposed to have a firearm and who does not have a firearm. That is the reality and the concern that I have heard across the board from all the conversations that I've had. So,
follow up, Representative DePell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we actually are in contact with local authorities. We have a definitive plan. They understand what it is. And it's truly the only way that we can defend ourselves in a timely manner from an active shooter. And this being a terrible issue, I mean, I echo what Representative Roach said. All the students that have come here to testify, and you have the best intent. I know that you do, and everybody here does. But we also have that reality of that 1% or less. And that is the concern that I have, because non-public schools, especially religious schools, have been not necessarily singularly targeted, but it stands out as an outlier. And if you look at the percentages, you'll find that those are the schools that are more often targeted. Not always, but more often targeted. And it depends on the state, depends on the demographic, depends on where you are. And then it happens in the place where you never thought it would happen. And so, you know, with the most sincere intent, I can completely understand the sentiment. I don't want this to happen to anybody, ever. I really don't even want the need for guns to exist in the world, truly. But they do, because we live in a fallen world. You know, evil people do evil things. And so I have to grapple with that reality, and I have to advocate for my district and the students that live in that district, and I certainly have to speak up for the least of these who certainly can't for themselves. So I do appreciate the sentiment, but I hope you can understand where I'm coming from as well.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a couple of questions, so hopefully I can go through these pretty quickly. And some of them are going to be for nonpartisan, so hang on one second. So first of all, I want to just get a little clarity from the current law right now. I taught in schools for a long, long, long time. They're gun-free zones. They've been gun-free zones for a long time. The current law right now, if a person comes to school and they're in the parking lot, they leave their car at that point in time, what is the current law and how does this bill change it? I just want to make sure that I'm very clear on this.
Mr. Diebel.
Madam Chair, current law, and Representative Mueller, the current law requires the gun owner to store it in the trunk or in the, it's less strenuous than this. I can pull up the exact language, but it's the standard. There is an obligation to store the gun securely, but the definition of securely is being changed in this proposal.
Representative Mueller.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. I do want to know, and then again to Mr. Diebel, if an SRO officer is on campus but is off duty, I think I heard you address this, but I just want to ensure, is that SRO expected to then go store their firearms someplace else if they're not on duty? I just wanted to just get some clarify.
Mr. Diebel.
Madam Chair and Representative Mueller, no, they would not, because there's an existing exception that's not being amended by this proposal that an active licensed peace officer doesn't need to be in the scope of their duties. So if I'm off duty but I'm currently licensed by the post board, I'm allowed to carry on school property. And so that would cover the situation of an SRO who's not on duty.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Okay, so I think I'm done with you. Thank you so much. All right, I am, as a person who's taught in school for over 20 years, I have been in the situation where there has been very scary situations, and I've cried in my classrooms, and I've cried with my students, and I've been there. And so this is very near and dear to my heart, and I just want to make sure that when we are talking about this, I want to know, I'm trying to get clarity. I'm not saying that I'm just trying to get clarity. And the clarity that I'm trying to understand is mostly around the Minnesota State High School League piece of the bill. I believe that the laws that we already have would do what you're trying to do. And so I'd like to continue to have a discussion about why we think we need to extend this and change what it means to be stored securely. I think that we already have that, and I want to be able to understand why we need to further that. But the clarity that I need now is on the Minnesota State High School League. I have been at lots of places where high school league uses other private places. And according to the testimony, let me just pull it up, it says that high school league has and talked about how some of the clarity that they wanted was that when gun clubs and clay targets and all that stuff have this done at a private facility, they said they needed some more conversation. I know that football is done at the Viking Stadium. I know that there's other things that are done at the Target Center. And how is this going to be enforced at Minnesota State High School League sponsored events that take place at private property such as what we have for this? Madam Chair.
Wait, Rep. Green, would you like to tackle that, or would you like a testifier too? Okay. Sheriff Witt.
Well, thank you for that question. So those are the calls that we get anyways, you know, and when we get those calls, you know, sometimes, I shouldn't say sometimes, but it's looking at, okay, what does the law say? What I testified to earlier about just being more consistent for law enforcement, it would matter. So if there's not supposed to be a weapon in a vehicle that's not secured, right, and the person is not there, we should be able to take that into our possession and so that it is safe to give it to us. Not to turn more people into criminals, it is to keep our community safe. We have an unprecedented amount of stolen guns in our communities in the hands of people who should not have them. And so we get those calls. We get them all the time. You know, I could tell you recently here in Minneapolis, maybe 3 weeks ago, where there was somebody which was called a slumper, sleeping in the car with a gun sitting next to him. And, you know, we were called to assist another local agency in retrieving that weapon safely from it. That gun turned out to be stolen as well. So it's about keeping people safe. It's not about infringing on people's rights. We just want to keep people safe and keep them out of the hands of people who should not have them.
Representative Muir.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. And I guess then my follow-up question would be, sometimes people call police because they see a gun and they're very nervous about it, and I understand that completely. My question is, at the places that I've already talked about, is it already the policy at those private entities that you are required to have your gun locked up in the trunk? And to further this is, would people who go to these entities then know, okay, I'm not at a state high school league sponsored event and now I have to change that policy? Would event centers or something like that, when they sponsor something like this, how would they notify? How would we get to know if the policy was normally something else and now we are a state high school league sponsored event and now this is a changed policy? I just need to know practically, how are we going to implement this? And again, I'm not trying to be nitpicky and try to get all this. I'm saying that there's people who carry their guns and they are expecting that they are not breaking the law. They are trying to actively not break the law. And so that's what I'm concerned about.
Representative Green.
Yeah.
No, we're going to tag team this one.
Okay, Representative Green and Sheriff Witt, go for it.
Sorry. Just one of the things I want to bring up too, right? It's like, you walk up to a venue and you can see this premises banned guns. There are people who watch to see people go put those back in their vehicles so they know where to look when they see that those signs are posted. With how to make it work or how to implement it, I will let you start with that one. So.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. Mueller, for your question. So currently, Minnesota State High School League, the policies that students have to follow and people who attend those events have to follow school. School policy follows them no matter where they go. So if we have a group of students or we have an event going down at U.S. Bank Stadium, the policies that students have to adhere to and spectators needs to still follow that policy. And so I think that the expectations are there, that communication comes through schools, that this is what's expected. That wouldn't change. This gets rolled into school policy because that's where it will end up. So I hope that gives a little bit more clarification. And I do also want to acknowledge the challenge of that because it is challenging, right? Does that mean if someone's parked on a road next to a school, are they, you know, is this part of this new law or that you'd have to have it stored more safely? And so I just want to address that too, and that's something that we're talking about, and I would love to get this bill to public safety to really look at that and the implementation of things. The other thing that I just wanted to address that we talked about too is the safe storage. So right now, really it's a bit loose on how you store a firearm in a vehicle, which is probably why they're getting stolen out of cars all the time. And so this bill, we really worked on best practices and like, what does that look like? And it's making sure it's actually locked. Like you can't get access to it. You know, I drive, we have two different cars in our house. We don't really have a trunk. Like I have a hatchback, right? So like the language is out of date as well. And so this is to say, you know, how do we keep firearms secured when they are off the body? And that's what this is.
Final follow-up, Representative Buehler.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. I really appreciate your patience and indulgence. And thank you. I appreciate that. You know, this is one of those strange bills that have two jurisdictions, right, with education and with public safety. I'm one of the few members that have the privilege of serving on both just until this term. And it has always been really good to have multiple perspectives because we look at things through multiple lenses. I think there are things that have to be hammered out in public safety. And that's why when I've asked my questions, I've tried really, in this committee, I've tried really hard to stay here at, you know, in education. And so some of the, what I'm trying to say is I believe there's still enough ambiguity in some of the education language that I'm not comfortable to send it to public safety, not because I don't think it doesn't need to be there, because it does, but because I think that there just needs to be some clarity with some, as I say, high school league, with some other things in there that that I want, you know, I'm looking at even some of the questions that my researchers have put up, and I'm like, that deserves to be in public safety. It's like, so those are the things that I want to see it go to public safety, but I want to see it go to public safety after we kind of hammer out some of these education questions. And so I want to work with you on this because I think it's really important. And as a school teacher, I don't want to infringe on anyone's rights, nor do I want to see a single person accidentally break a law that they didn't intend to break a law. I don't want to see any child get hurt. And I understand the arguments of when you do nothing, nothing happens. I get it. I don't want to do nothing. I just want to make sure that the law actually says what we want it to say and that there's more clarity in those Minnesota State High School League guidance there. So thank you, Representative Green. I'm currently a no right now, but I don't want to be a no, and I want us to figure out how to do this together.
Representative Keeler.
Thanks. I'll be quick. To the students, thank you. I think that it is really, really important that we listen to you. This committee, since we've been back in session, has been students bringing the things forward, and I think we need to just hear you guys, and we need to understand that your stories are real and your fear is real. I know you guys gave statistics that show where we're stemming from. I believe you. I believe your research that you've done is real. I believe what we're sharing here is honest. I do have one question for nonpartisan staff. I'm not totally sure who would answer. I'm sure it's not you. I'm sure it's somebody in the education world.
We'll figure it out.
Is there anything preventing a private school from hiring some sort of safety or SRO style individual within their school?
Ms. Barra.
Madam Chair, Representative Keeler, non-public schools can work with school resource officers.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure we knew that they have the opportunity to hire somebody if you would like, if you feel like that's safe for your students. We're not preventing you from doing that. That's a choice. I also just want to say, you know, we have had horrific incidences happen, and we often see people say, you know, we're sending thoughts and prayers, and we're really sorry about that. And what we often see your generation say, policy and change is what we're looking for. And again, I think we have opportunities here, and I want you to watch how people vote, not just what they say to you. They'll give you great sentiments, and they'll say that they really care, and they're teachers, and they want to do what's right by students, but watch how they continue to vote on things when you guys come and you ask us to do something for a generation that is absolutely terrified in a place that we require you to go. It is required that you go to school, or you're not in line with things within the law. And so I just want you to know and understand that we're hearing your data, we're hearing your research, and we're really grateful that you continue to show up. You do have support at this table, and I just want to make it very, very clear. Thank you, Representative Green. Thank you, Sheriff, for coming. Thank you for continuing to do what is good and what is right on behalf of our children and the generations that we are here and designed to protect. Okay, I see you. I recognize you, and I am sorry that we live in a world that chooses other things over our children. Thank you.
Chair Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be quick. I know you're trying to keep things moving here. I too want to thank our young people who are here. Thank you. I just love it when young people get engaged. So, Representative Green, thanks for bringing these young people here to be part of this. I just want to mention a couple things. First of all, I'm a carry permit person myself. I have a carry permit. And my mind's kind of reeling with all these different things. I think there's a lot of ambiguity that was brought out here, whether it's non-public schools and some of the other things Representative Mueller brought up, that need to be clarified more in my mind before I could support this. But one thing I want to bring up is yesterday in education finance, we had a hearing on bills that would provide additional safety for our kids at schools and funding for schools facility for security to extend the Safe Schools revenue. The proposals included funding for public schools, but also charter schools and non-public schools and our tribal nation schools. And we heard some concerns about the non-public schools and how some of the things they're doing currently to protect themselves may not be allowed if this bill were to become law. So I'm hopeful that we can continue talks and get this right. I think there's very good points in it. We want to keep our kids safe. I'm going to end it there because I know you're in a hurry, but at this point I cannot support this as written, this bill. Thank you.
Representative Green, would you briefly like to provide closing remarks?
I will go quickly. Thank you so much, Chair. You know, I don't really think there is ambiguity in the bill. I think it's a little bit, I think it actually is very clear. If you are on school property and you are near students, you are responsible for your firearm, making sure that it is stored securely, that a student can't accidentally access it. That's it. And we heard from our principals and our superintendents, they don't want the authority or the liability to make the decision on whether or not they choose who gets to carry inside a building. Those are the two things. It's actually pretty clear, and I appreciate nonpartisan staff. Thank you so much for sharing kind of that, the legal part of things. So I am disappointed. I know it's going to be a no vote from the side of the table. I'm hearing that. So I would like a roll call.
With that, Representative Green motions to re-refer House File 3409 to the Public Safety and Policy Committee and that a roll call will be taken. Ms. Geller, will you please take the roll?
Yes. Co-Chair Bennett.
No.
Co-Chair Bennett, no. Co-Chair Jordan.
Aye.
Co-Chair Jordan, aye. Representative Hill.
Hill, yes.
Representative Hill, yes. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Representative Mueller, no. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Representative Bierman, aye. Representative DePell.
No.
Representative DePell, no. Representative Falconer.
Falconer, yes.
Representative Falconer, yes. Representative Fogelman.
Fogelman, no.
Representative Fogelman, no. Representative Gordon.
No.
Representative Gordon, no. Representative Gottfried.
Gottfried, yes.
Representative Gottfried, yes. Representative Green.
Green, yes.
Representative Green, yes. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, yes.
Representative Keeler, yes. Representative Lawrence.
Representative Lawrence, no.
Representative Lawrence, no. Representative Roach?
Roach, no.
Representative Roach, no.
There being 7 ayes and 7 nays, the motion does not prevail. With that, I will lay the bill over. Our last bill up for the day that we are going to try to get to, we're going to do things in a little bit of an unorthodox manner, so this bill will be laid over. But we're going to start with testimony on the bill, and then, time permitting, we will allow Representative Ray Rauer to explain the bill. So first on my list as a testifier is Rick Kaufman, followed by Superintendent Evans. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kaufman. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rick Kaufman. I appreciate the opportunity to address this committee on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I've spent more than 3 decades working in school safety, behavioral threat assessment, crisis response, recovery, prevention, and for the past 19 years served as the Executive Director of Emergency Management for Bloomington Public Schools. For much of my career, I got very good at responding to school shootings, Columbine, Sandy Hook, Parkland, Uvalde, and dozens of others that don't make national news, whether supporting as boots on the ground or later virtually as technology improved. In the wake of those tragedies, I experienced an epiphany. Why were we waiting for bad things to happen? Why weren't we investing more in early reporting systems and in building a culture where students feel safe coming forward and where students know exactly what to do with that information? When done right, this disciplined process can dramatically improve our chances of stopping the rarest but most devastating events to occur. That's why we believe in anonymous reporting. It is one of the most powerful prevention tools we have, and it works. I'm here today to urge your support for legislation that will establish and enhance anonymous reporting platforms in our schools while ensuring that systems are embedded within a comprehensive school-based behavioral threat assessment and management framework. Now, 1 month before Columbine, one of the perpetrators submitted a creative writing assignment graphically describing the trajectory of a bullet through a human head. It was enough to alarm his teacher, more so much that it was addressed with his parents during a scheduled parent-teacher conference several weeks before the attack. But that concern, however well-intentioned, stopped there. It was not elevated to a counselor, an administrator, nor was it documented or discussed with peers. I can assure you, having co-led the Columbine Crisis Response Recovery Team, that this teacher acted out of concern. But there was no system at that time that fostered collaborative threat detection, assessment, and reporting, so her observations remained isolated. Anonymous reporting platforms remove barriers that prevent students and staff from speaking up, often because of uncertainty whether the concern is credible or simply not knowing where or whom to go to. However, reporting alone is not enough. This bill's current language relies heavily on the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension's tip line. While the BCA plays an important role under the direction of Superintendent Drew Evans, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, there are some significant limitations. The BCA tip line is not staffed 24/7. It is not equipped to triage and manage the volume of behavioral concerns across all K-12 schools in Minnesota. It is designed to receive and forward threats, not conduct behavioral threat assessments. Those threats are indeed shared with local law enforcement. And I want to point out that our law enforcement agency in Bloomington, along with Bloomington Public Schools, we have an amazing relationship of collaboration and partnership. In my 19 years with Bloomington Public Schools, unfortunately, we have not received one single notice through the BCA tip line. Additional deficiencies in this current language is the lack of clear standards for how threats are evaluated, prioritized, or managed, and it ignores the online spaces where we know warning signs often appear first in posts, memes, videos, and gaming chats. Digital awareness and fluency is no longer an option. While districts are given the option to implement their own systems, as the bill states, or contract with vendors, unfortunately, there are no clear accountability standards. And there is a lack of dedicated funding for systems, staffing, or for the necessary training school-based teams need, yet districts will be required to manage, certify, and report compliance. Let me finish with this. Anonymous reporting works when trained people receive reports in real time, when school teams have capacity to assess risk, and when supports are in place to intervene. Without that, we're just creating a false sense of security. We are not asking you as legislators to abandon this effort. By all means, do not abandon it. We are asking you to strengthen it. Work with those of us trained in behavioral threat detection and assessment to establish clear expectations and develop real-time response protocols as a start. But please, most importantly, fund the work. If we do this right, it will save lives. If we do it halfway, it becomes paperwork and risk. Our students deserve so much more. Thank you for your leadership and your commitment to Minnesota students and staff.
Thank you, Mr. Coffin. Next on my list is Superintendent Evans of the BCA. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Chair Jordan and members of the committee. And I know it's getting long and I hear your voice struggling towards the end of the committee. My name is Drew Evans. I'm the superintendent at the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. You know, I was here for the beginning of your hearing and hearing the mother with the Sandy Hook promise talk about a number of different aspects. And I think this is a component of what she was referencing that we've long agreed with that. You think about going back and you look at the child, and I did the math, it's 12 years ago. You know, to think about that and the amount of time that's gone by and the lack of reporting systems that we continue to have should be concerning for us because of the inconsistency across our state, which is not unique across the United States. Their reporting program that they have is a good program that they are, but I think what this bill does recognize is that may not be a one-size-fits-all solution for different districts. So a couple of things that I'd like to talk about just briefly. The BCA does operate a 24/7. A couple of things that I don't mean to disagree in person, but we do operate at 24/7. It is monitored. We are a 24/7 operation. Those tips do come in, and we do have a behavioral threat assessment management team that does assess and assist local jurisdictions across Minnesota. However, I would completely agree that a one-size-fits-all or relying upon the state is not the proper approach. I would also agree that school districts in particular should be partnering everywhere they can with their local law enforcement and have robust threat assessment management and safety teams within the school district that are working in conjunction with their law enforcement for these threats as they come in across Minnesota. The BCA's BTAM, as we call it, Behavioral Threat Assessment Management Team and tip line, are designed to be a backstop. They're designed to be a backstop backstop for those jurisdictions where there isn't somewhere to go, where they don't have a local solution available, and to provide assistance to local jurisdictions when they need it. It's a busy team. It's also not intended simply to be focused on school threats. School threats keep me up at night. Mass violence keeps me up at night, not just when it comes to these, and that is what this threat reporting is designed to do, because our faith-based institutions have experienced significant rises in threats to them as well with mass violence, large gatherings, etc. And so we are a component and can be of assistance, but I would agree with the other testifier that we certainly is not the one-size-fits-all. That's why we've never suggested that as a solution, because what works in Bloomington may not work in International Falls, Minnesota, and the best prevention efforts are those designed that have a real robust local response that can be there, but we want to certainly be here to be that assistance in those jurisdictions where they don't have anything at all in that process. So it's certainly, I know there's more to do. I'm happy to answer any questions now or into the future as you consider this bill.
Thank you, Superintendent Evans. And so Rep. Ray Rauer, would you like, I will move House File 3487 before the committee and allow you to briefly explain it, and then we will be laying the bill over for further consideration at a later date.
So that sounds
good. To the committee, Rep. Ray Rauer.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Apologize for the lateness of this committee going. Thank you so much to both of my testifiers. As you can see, we have a lot of work to do. You've heard these testimony over the last week, and I just really want to hope that we can all work together in a bipartisan manner to come up with solutions. I agree with laying the bill over. I want you to know it is a first draft in the bill. I want to hear from you. We can certainly make revisions and continue to improve it throughout this session with the hopes of passing it this session and getting that work done. So I believe it's our duty to take action to prevent the next tragedy as legislators from happening. And I truly hope that we can deliver for the families and for all Minnesotans. So anonymous threat reporting systems, or ATRS as I'm gonna call them going forward, are fundamental to preventing the next tragedy. Our goal should be doing our best to protect all kids as soon as possible. Waiting multiple years until we have the funding to provide the best system that we think exists to every school district is not the answer. We need to do our best to protect all kids as soon as possible. So with that, we know that funding is limited, and because of this, my bill provides a choice. School districts must either use and promote the Department of Public Safety's anonymous threat reporting system, which would be free utilization for them, or implement their own local system. If a school district does create their own ATRS, then they must also promote public awareness and education about it, implement evidence-based student violence prevention training that teaches students how to identify the warning signs and how to report them. If the school district chooses to utilize the Department of Safety's ATRS, the district must provide students, families, employees, and community members information about the system, how to use the system, and must include this information on its website, its student handbook, and notify parents annually. With that, I'll just wrap it up, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to get this in at the end of your long hearing.
Yes, thank you, Rep. Ray Rauer. And with that, I will lay over House File 3487. And thank you to all of our testifiers today. Thank you to all of our members and our staff, both nonpartisan and partisan alike. This was a hard day. So please, take care of yourself tonight and think about it. And with that, this meeting is adjourned. Mm-hmm.